Welcome to This Conversation. I'm your host, Teresa Keller. My show today is a rerun. It's an interview with filmmaker David Alford and his production company, Cross Purposes Production, about his brand new feature-length film called Searching for the Elephant. This film has its world premiere Thursday, March the 28th, at Legacy Theaters near Exit 7. The show will run through next Thursday, April the 4th. You can Google Legacy Theaters in Bristol for showtimes. It has been said that no one is going to believe that this is a local film, but the film is out and you can see it. Here is a rerun with details about the film from my December interview with filmmaker David Alford. Welcome, David Alford, to This Conversation.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, first of all, the term Cross Purposes Production is kind of a double entendre. Do you want to tell us about the meaning of it? It sounds like we're going to be at cross purposes and have disagreements.
We are. And it came from my very first short film that I ever tried to write. And in that film, I had two characters. I had a young medical student who was very eager to pursue his career, really focused on everything about the future. And I had him paired with a young man with cancer who had no future. Those two characters were at cross purposes. So I put them in a room together and put them in a situation together to see how those two characters would blend. And that's where the title for the film came from. And since it was my first short film, I named the company after it as
well. Well, so that first short film must have been a success.
It was. It was a surprise to me. I actually wrote it as a play for the Barter Theater, has a playwriting competition every year. And I thought I would try my hand at writing a play. And as I was writing through the screenplay, or the play itself, I realized it would make a better screenplay than it would a stage play. And so that's when I decided, well, I've never made a movie before, but maybe this is a possibility. So I went ahead and got some friends together here locally and shot the film over the course of a weekend, a long weekend in 2019. And the film was picked up by a production company, a distribution company, and it's since been shown globally.
The name of the play that became the name of your company. And you go, oh, gee, I think this play looks like it ought to be a movie. And so I'll make a movie. I mean, that's quite a lofty vision and goal is.
And I had had some friends who had made some short films here locally in the Abingdon area. And so I went to them and I said, guys, I kind of like this script. I think it might be strong. Is there a way to make this into a short film? And I said, well, I know a cinematographer. Well, I know someone who can do sound. And I know someone who has a camera. And it basically just became this pool of local talent of people who'd kind of been dabbling in film for a couple of years. I just pulled a team together and we shot the film. And it just turned out to be really great.
So that was Cross Purposes, your first short film. The reason that sparked me to talk to you today is because I heard that you have your third film and that this is a feature film. It is called Searching for the Elephant, and you are putting the finishing touches on it right now.
That's right. Yeah, the first film was a short, and this will be our third feature film. So it's our fourth film in total in 5 years. And it has been a really interesting growth curve because we've learned each time we've made a film, we've learned what not to do a few more times. But this last one we shot in July around the Saltville, Chilhowee area. It is a neo-Western, so it has Western-style cinematography. It's not truly a Western. It's a modern story, but it's shot in the Western style. And so you'll see from the hip shots, we're almost like a standoff of two cowboys when two characters are conflicting each other. That's what gives it that neo-Western flavor. So we needed a ranch to shoot it on. And so we found one in the space between Chilhowee and Saltville with about 800 acres. We were able to rent that ranch for a month and shoot there. And so the film itself has that quality too.
You'll have to explain to us what the term feature film even means. You said a short and it was distributed. Yeah. And now you're saying feature film. And these are terms that a lot of us lay people just don't know.
Well, a feature film is what you'd go to the movie theater to see. It's about an hour and a half to 2 hours long. It's a full scale production, start to finish. It's usually a full story with a good five or six main characters in it. A short film, it can be anything from 2 minutes, 30 seconds to 15 minutes or so. Short films are often made by starting up filmmakers and they're put into film festivals. And they're almost like resumes. They're like, see what we can do kind of films. And they're put in these film festivals and competitions where they compete against each other. Whereas feature films, you try to go straight into distribution, try to get them into theaters or get them onto streaming services where they get picked up. Feature films do get picked up by distribution companies. Short films often don't. They're often just kind of showcase pieces. So this is our third feature film as a company.
That's interesting that you, when you start, that you do shorts and that serves as a resume. And
It
then you
does.
build until you have more confidence and other people are going to have confidence in you. But I get the idea that feature films have a lot of different categories as well. I mean, if you say I'm doing a feature film, I mean, that would say to me, well, okay, I'll be able to go to the cinema and see it. I mean, that may be the case or that may not be the case. Explain that process to us.
That process is a hard mountain to climb because feature films are often done by large studios. What you often go see at the cinema or where you see place else are these $100 million productions put out by film companies. And so independent filmmakers like myself, we often have to come up with the money to make our films on our own, which is again why people often start with short films because they're less expensive to make. And the bottom line is you don't have money. A feature film can be quite expensive. It can get up into the six digits really quickly, not more. And so, for a feature filmmaker who's an independent filmmaker like myself, who doesn't work through the studio system, the money raising is a big, big part of it. For us, we've had to be super creative because we're just getting started in the monetary side of it, just starting to make a little money as a company. So we had to be really careful with our budgets on feature films. So our budgets are significantly smaller than most films you'd see at the cinema. Things are getting better. Each time we're getting a little, growing a little larger, the budget's getting a little heavier, and we're starting to get a little bit more quality under our belt.
All right, so where are these things shown? Again, I think feature film, I go to the movie, I see it there. I guess I think big studios. So when you're not a big studio and it doesn't show up as a major production in the weekly releases of films, where does it go? Where's the market?
That is the magic of streaming on the internet. And it's also the magic of COVID as well. When we first produced our first feature-length film, it was a very low-budget film, but there's something called a distribution company, and they picked it up, which means they will take the film and they'll distribute it to everywhere they can possibly get the film distributed. Any place they can, any streaming services, networks, TV networks, that kind of thing, they can get the film on. They've got connections and they will plug it into every one of them. So our first feature film ended up going international. It's been shown literally around the globe through cable networks, TV networks, streaming platforms, you name it. It never saw, well, it saw a few weeks in a theater here locally that we put together, but otherwise it's been shown on the internet and on TV and satellite networks nonstop for 3.5 years now.
So are these films that were your previous feature films, are they somewhere where people can search them and find them and watch them now?
Oh, absolutely. Our first two are on Amazon Prime. You can find them there. You can find them on Tubi, which is a really popular streaming website. PureFlix is a faith-based website it's a paid subscription service. They carry all three films, even the short one. You can just Google each of these films that we have, and they'll go to the Cross Purposes Productions, look at our film titles, Google the film titles, and you can find them on streaming services. It's crosspurposes.productions.com is how
Okay,
you
so
pronounce
go
it.
to crosspurposes.productions.com. But let's just take a little shortcut here,
Okay.
filmmaker David Alford, and
Okay.
maybe go ahead and say the names of those previous feature films so people can go look for them as soon as they finish hearing this interview.
Okay, we can do that. So the first film, the short, it's about 40 minutes long, is called Cross Purposes. The first feature film, which is about 2 hours long, is called Found. And it's got a period at the end that'll get you there a little faster, but Found will get you there by itself. The second feature film is called Royal Ashes, and it's a family drama. And then the newest one, of course, is called Searching for the Elephant. It is not finished. It'll be finished in about 2 weeks.
All right, so we're going to talk about Searching for the Elephant since that's the one that's coming. Well, first of all, let's talk about the process because you are 2 weeks from being finished. How do you know you're 2 weeks from being finished? What? Because things always go wrong. What is it that you have to accomplish in the next alleged 2 weeks?
Well, the film itself has been shot, it's been edited, it's been put together. Audio is nearly done, and coloring is nearly done. There really isn't anything else left to do except create a trailer and some advertising. So the film itself has been is nearly wrapped. As far as the process of post-production, you take raw footage that you go out on location, you shoot all this raw footage for several weeks. You bring it back and you edit it together. You slice it how you want the scene to look, how you want each scene to come across. How you want to build intensity each time around. Once you get that all laid out, then you have to clean it all up. You clean up all the airplanes that flew over your set while you were trying to record, all the cars that drove by. You cut out all the bad sounds you don't want. You cut out all the lighting that you don't like. You redesign it, you remaster it. Once it's all locked in and looking good and sounding good, then you're ready to start showing it. That's where we're at right now.
All right. And you're quite confident that it's going to be ready. Now, do you have a distribution company lined up?
We are going with a new distribution route this time, and we're actually talking about possibly even selling the film outright this time. So that's a new step for us. All of our previous films have been carried by Bridgestone Media Group, and they've offered to take this one, but we really want to go a different way. And so we think we're going to try a whole new distribution route this time. So we will start offering it to some bidders right after January.
We're going to talk money, but first of all, I'm just going to remind listeners that I'm talking to David Alford. He is a filmmaker who lives nearby here somewhere. We haven't given the street address, but I know that he works at Barter Theater, and I know he's been making films here for several years. And his film, Searching for the Elephant, is in post-production, ready to be released to a distribution company that may, as he said, pay for it outright. So the previous films, the money comes in dribs and drabs,
It
depending on where it
does,
gets.
yes. It
Explain that process.
when you sign your film over to a distribution company, they take full control of the film. You lose control of it. You own it, but they distribute it. So every dollar they make, they keep half of it and they give you half. And they do all the work themselves. All of our first three films are licensed to a distribution company. So they'll go, say they'll take it to Roku, and they'll go, "Hey, Roku, here's a film. Do you want it?" And Roku says, "Yeah, we'll take it." Roku then shows it on the internet. You watch it. There's commercials built into it. Every commercial that passes through your screen on that film, Roku takes half of it. Our distribution taking company takes half of it. And then our distribution company gives us half of that. So everyone takes their piece of the pie, and you get a little sliver of the pie from all the streaming services that's on throughout the. So that's how the money trickles back to us, and that's how we use that money.
This time, you're saying that some distribution company may be looking at paying for it outright. So they give you, I would assume, a very significant lump sum, and then they keep everything of what they do. Is that how that works?
That's the gamble of filmmaking too, because if you do that, if you say, "I'm going to just sell my film outright," you may get 200, 300, 400% profit on how much you spent making the film. Then that company owns it, and they can do whatever they want to it. If they go out there and find a studio who will put it in the theaters and make $10 million, that $10 million is their $10 million and not yours. So when you sell your film outright, it is cash in hand and it's cash automatically, but it's the film is gone after that. If you decide to keep it and try to distribute it yourself, then it may take longer for you to get your money back if you ever do, which is film is always a big if. But if you do, you'll continue to own that film for as long as that film is out there. All of our first films belong to our company. So we will continue to receive and collect residuals as long as those films are being broadcast. So it's a lifelong investment, but it's small and it's.
I was really curious about that, David. I mean, you're talking about the expense that's involved and the long-term process sometimes of even making back what you've spent. And I've noticed that some of your actors are well-known professionals in the area, and I'm sure they ain't working for free.
No, they're not.
And so somewhere, if you're going to start a company, you got to have a big old chunk of money to get started with and to float on until you start making big profits.
That's the magic of it, though. That's the magic of filmmaking in 2023. Is you can make a movie. Our first feature film was made with $9,000. We had a $10,000 pot of money, and we shot Cross Purposes on $9,000. And that film has now generated three times that amount. And that's a short film. Our second feature film we did on $40,000, and it's generated twice that amount. So it's each film, if they're successful, which is not a guarantee in filmmaking, they will then funnel money back into your company on an ongoing basis. But it's got to be out there and it has to be successful. And to be honest with you, the vast majority, we're talking 90% of independent films will never make a dime. They'll be underwater forever. A good 10% lucky enough to get their money back in independent filmmaking. That is a hard, hard business if you're counting on it for money. So you have to really make sure that if you're going to go into this business, you can only spend what you can afford to lose because chances are you're not going to get back.
You can spend what only what you can afford to lose. You're working at barter. I know barter is a union operation. We're really privileged to have an equity theater here, but I don't know that that's enough money to live well and to start a big company like this. I'm still thinking, did you win a lottery sometime in the past to get started on this?
This company's never been my way of feeding family and paying the mortgage. It's not yet. It may grow into that one day. And all takes is one film breaking out. Searching for the Elephant could be a breakout film. It's high enough quality it could take off. In which case, the company will start supporting itself. But no, at the beginning, you definitely don't count on this as a way of feeding your family. You gotta have other jobs. It's not the way you start. You start humble, you start meager, and you work your way up. That's how.
Okay, we're getting back to the film. I'm going to divert just a little bit because somewhere on a website related to your company, I saw a reference to your family and that you have children. So where do you live and what is your family life like?
My wife and I live here in Abingdon, Virginia. We moved here about 15 years ago. She's in medicine, and so she had started a practice here in Abingdon. That brought us here with our three small children, who are now adult children. I have two married daughters and a 15-year-old son, and now three grandchildren. And so Abingdon has been our home for about 15 years, and so our family life is a little busy. My wife's practice is very full. I also homeschool our kids, so I have balance between work and home life is pretty much an ongoing juggle.
Oh
But
my
we've
gosh. Wait, excuse me, time out. You homeschool your son or your
Well, yeah,
15-year-old?
I homeschooled all of our kids, and our son's the only one left, so he's 15, but he works with me on films too. So what the great part is we shot in July. He was right there working on set with me, and I consider that part of school too, because he
All
was
right.
home.
Now, what do your adult kids say, Dad? What
Oh,
do
they
they
love
think?
it. They're in it. My youngest daughter was my assistant director on set. She keeps a whole crew, all the actors, all the crew organized and scheduled. My oldest daughter is the artistic designer. She's a production designer, which means she designed the costumes and she also decorates the sets. And she does that before the movie ever starts. So she, because she's got kids, so she does that, sets it all up, and then steps away, and the rest of us jump in there.
It
So
sounds
it's
like it.
a family project. It really
I
is.
was going to say it's more than just a family business, it's a family endeavor and activity.
Yeah,
So,
we have great fun working together. That's for sure.
all right, I still want to go back to this beginning and this vision that you had because I watched some of the clips. I know a little bit about video and it's high quality production. You weren't trained in this. You said, "Oh, I have this idea. Let me get some people together. I know some people who can shoot videos." So you've evidently had a big learning curve and have probably become expert in things you never thought you'd know anything about.
It's been a work in progress. It's like going to film school, only all your assignments are shown to the world, so all your mistakes are thrown out there out in the front for everyone to see. And it's been a learning curve. But also, I've also received a lot of training as a storyteller. Having worked at the barter for 10 years, you learn how to tell stories, and you also get a chance to spend time with audiences, and that is invaluable as a filmmaker. Most filmmakers don't get this. Sitting in a theater, talking to an audience, hearing them laugh at your lines. Hearing them cry when things get emotional, and doing that for decades, you really get a feel for what touches people and what doesn't. So when you're talking through a camera to an audience, I've been very blessed in that having all that experience with live audiences helps me to know what's going to touch an audience through a camera lens. And so I think because of that, and because we really work on having storyteller hearts at the barter, it's really helped to find stories that have impact and reach people and touch people, and then being able to put them on screen in a way that you hope will actually reach out and touch people. And I think that has been my schooling before I ever set foot behind a camera. And I think that's made all the difference in the world with our films.
So in dialogue, for example, you're going to have a sense, an understanding of how that dialogue is going to play because of your
Indeed.
experience on stage.
And working with actors, you get a sense of the rhythm of dialogue and how actors talk naturally to one another. And so I think in the editing process, you have total control over that. On stage, you're live. You're talking back and forth as a conversation. In film, you're taping the lines separately and you're splicing them together in a rhythm that, and I think as an actor, first, being a director helps you to be a director for your actors and helps you get performances that you want to get out of them. I think that's really been a big key to being successful so far, because our films have all made money, which is something that almost never happens.
Let's talk about some of the roles that you've done at Barter, for which people might recognize you.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been 10 years, and work at the bar. You do a lot of you know a lot of plays. The last play I did was right before COVID hit, and it was White Christmas. And gosh, I can't remember character names anymore. I just remember the shows. White Christmas there. I was involved in Beauty and the Beast, Driving Miss Daisy, Les Miserables, Wizard of Oz, Tale of Two Cities.
So you're an actor. Are you a singer as well? Those are musicals you're talking
I've
about.
been in musicals. Yeah, I've been singing in musicals since I was a little kid.
What a life you live. I mean, you must have to have a, I don't know, an hourly alarm for what you're supposed to be doing next, David Alford. Let's talk about, when I was introducing you and I said your company is called Cross Purposes Production, I said double entendre, but we didn't get back to the double entendre. One is actually people at Cross Purposes, but the other is Cross Purposes.
Yeah, it is a faith-based and family film company. So we make productions that are affirming. They come from a worldview of Christianity because that's where I come from. So that's how I write. It's also faith-based in that it's grounded on people and how people interact with faith. And I think that's more important than becoming, for lack of a better word, preachy with stories. I don't try to do that. I try to just tell stories about the human spirit from a Christian world perspective, because that's what I have. And so that's that. And then family films as well, films that are friendly for the family and fun for.
Well, when you say faith-based, I tell you, it sounded like it was a leap of faith when you got started on this.
Yes.
And maybe you're still riding on some of that as this last film gets launched and maybe becomes the big feature film you've been looking for.
Well, and what's fun about this is if you do come to the barter, I tapped into so many barter friends for this last film. It was so much fun. There's probably about 10 people you see regularly at the barter who are in this new movie. And I haven't really tapped into them much before. One, they're super hard to get because their schedules are so incredibly hard at the barter. But in this case, I had enough cameo roles that I could bring them in. So you'll see a lot of friends from the barter in this movie, which is a lot of fun for me getting to work with them, having worked with them on stage, now working with them at the camera. It's been a lot of fun. And I think people who are fans of the barter will enjoy this.
Yeah, well, Rick McVeigh is one of those. I've interviewed him on this show, and Eugene Wolf is a beloved figure in the area, and he has his own radio show here on WEHC. So, yeah, if when you decide to branch out into radio, just let us know.
Well, actually, I did radio in college for about 10 years. Radio is
Well, of
all.
course you did. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Yeah, I believe you do need a radio show. We can look into that. Let's talk a little bit about the plot for this film that is just on the cusp of being released to the world called Searching for the Elephant. What is the plot? What is it all about?
People always ask me about the title. It has nothing to do with circuses or animals. Searching for the elephant is an expression that comes from the ranching. And what it is when a rancher hires ranch hands at the point, some point in the year when he hires ranch hands, he'll hire somebody. He'll look at that guy and go, that guy is going to take off when he gets the first best offer that comes along. That guy's not here to stay. He's just searching for the elephant, which means he's looking for that better job, always looking for that perfect situation and will move on every chance he gets. And so that concept of the title of Searching the Elephant is what really got me interested in the story. That and this weird idea I had about medieval castles. I was looking and doing some study about medieval castles and how they are defended. And I was fascinated by the different mechanisms and ideas of which people would use to defend their castles. And I thought to myself, that is really on an emotional level what a lot of us as people do to protect ourselves. Some of those same devices. And so I thought, well, how interesting would it be if I put two characters together who are just built massive walls around themselves and built themselves and pushed themselves away from everybody in their lives. And they were forced to live together in a small location. So I picked a grandfather and an estranged grandson who have never met. And they are forced to live on a ranch together because the grandson's been in trouble with the law. And must serve his, for lack of a better word, a house arrest there on his grandfather's ranch. So the two men pushed everyone out of their lives to find a way to break through each other's walls.
So you said the techniques in castles. I mean, the only one I think of is walls and then moats and then big gates that come down and skewer people or something. So were there analogies to other kinds of techniques?
Well, like if you have all your military, you never put all your military on the wall because if someone gets inside your wall, you have to have a second military band to protect yourself inside. I thought, well, that's kind of what we do. We hold back a little bit of ourselves in case someone gets past our protection, our self-protection. We have to have an ability to attack them with something. And I thought that is kind of what we do. We play games with ourselves as far as how we how we keep ourselves at a distance. And so in this story, I have a grandfather who's a Vietnam veteran who is very much self-protective. He's got secrets from the past and he keeps everyone away. Well, this grandson gets past his wall because he has to live on his ranch. And this grandson disarms him. So he has mechanisms in his life that he uses to push that grandson back and to keep him away from him when he gets too close to him. And so it really is a dynamic study of these two men and the hurts that they have and how they have to both deal with their own hurts and each other's hurts at the same time. It's very dramatic, but it's a very powerful film. I think in the end, I think people will be affirmed that it's okay to let someone in your life.
Who plays the role of the grandfather?
Rick McVeigh.
I thought I got a little confused when I was looking at the website, whether it was Rick McVeigh. Well, what does Eugene Wolfe do?
Eugene Wolfe is one of the grandfather's poker buddies who comes to the ranch every once in a while and plays poker with him. And he gets kind of tangled up in some of their the son, grandson, grandfather struggles.
Now, and there's got to be a woman or two in there somewhere.
There is. There's a young lady who's a veterinarian who comes by and takes care of the ranch animals. There's a little romantic story between the grandson and the veterinarian doc. Then there's a mom, the son's mom and son-in-law of the grandfather. She's caught up. This is the first time we've used all professional actors. We've always had to kind of tap into the local talent and family and friends. But Searching for the Elephant's the first time we've used all professional actors. And it's really, really improved the quality of our quality of film.
Well, you would like to think so, wouldn't you, that the professionals really are a little better than the amateurs that you would drag in from the street.
I've gotten some great performances out of my local actors, but I'm really excited to use them.
Well, we do need to talk about Joseph Stamm because he was integral to the production of this film. Tell us about him.
I found Joseph Stamm when he was 16. He played the title role in that very first short film I was telling you about. And I actually have known his family for years. I've known him since he was a little boy, but that was the first time I've ever worked with him as an actor. He was so good. And then he got involved with writing films. And so he contributed a little bit to Found, and he was the lead actor in Found and blew that film out of the water. This last film, Searching for the Elephant, he plays the grandson. He's 20 years old now, so he's grown up. And he plays the grandson who has a drug addiction problem. And he brings such warmth and humanity and suffering to that role that it's just power. And he also co-wrote and co-directed the movie. This first time he's done all that. So he's grown up. And that kid's ready to do movies on his own now. I'm lucky to have him as a partner. He's ready to take on the world. I think he's going to get a lot of attention for this film.
All right. Wonderful. My guest today, David Alford of Cross Purposes Productions, with his newest film, feature film, ready for release, called Searching for the Elephant. Thank you so much for being with me, David Alford. What a pleasure.
I appreciate you.
Thanks again to David Alford. And thanks again, above all, to our listeners. You have just heard a rerun of my December interview with David Alford about his film, Searching for the Elephant. As I mentioned before, the world premiere of this movie happens Thursday, March the 28th. If you're listening on Wednesday, that's tomorrow. If you're listening on Sunday, the movie is still available at Legacy Theaters, playing from Thursday, March the 28th in its debut, through Thursday, April the 4th. You can go to Legacy Theaters in Bristol for showtimes. Again, it has been said, you're not going to believe it's a local film. Find out for yourself. If you heard part of this, want to go back and hear the whole thing, you can go to your best podcast site, and all you have to do is say, WEHC, this conversation. You can even say, Alexa, play WEHC, this conversation, and lo and behold, the most recent episode will pop up. So thanks again to the listeners. This is This Conversation. You can hear it here on WEHC, Wednesdays at 6, Sundays at 2, and find it on the podcast site, as we said. More information at WEHCFM.com. Thanks again. See you next time.